Good afternoon, everyone. The hour of 1 o'clock having arrived, the Committee on Agriculture, Finance, and Policy is called to order. Today is Monday, March 10th, 2025. A quorum is present. Rep Fu, would you like to move the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes with a correction for the spelling for Layuna to change that from M to N, and that should be all. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fu. Rep Fu moves the minutes. And they are approved as corrected. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved as corrected. We have one bill up for discussion on the agenda today. Representative Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, yes, I'd like to move House File 1704.
Chair Anderson moves that House File 1704 to be put before the committee. Chair Anderson, would you like to move, would you like to move the DE3 amendment? Sorry about that.
Madam Chair, yes, I'd like to move the DE3 amendment to the bill.
All right, thank you, Chair Anderson. Chair Anderson moves the House File 1704 DE3 amendment. Chair Anderson, would you like to provide an introduction of the DE3 amendment before nonpartisan staff provides a walkthrough?
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, and committee members, thank you for your indulgence. We feel that this amendment, the DE3, supports all kinds of agriculture here in Minnesota, all sizes of farmers, large and small, organic and conventional. It supports urban farming, it supports rural farming, beginning and established farmers. It supports specialty crop growers and commodity producers, as well as providing support for ag education in high schools and our farm business management program. And it also helps in the Minnesota state system as well with that FBM program. I think all of us on the Ag Committee would maybe agree that we would like to see ag getting a little bit bigger piece of the overall Minnesota state budget, and this bill does that. Not a big push, but it increases our base by about $17 million, and that's about just under 4% of the anticipated $450 million surplus at the end of the 26-27 biennium. And I think we can do a lot of good things for a lot of people with a relatively small amount of money that still is in the ag budget. It replenishes the Ag Emergency Account, provides money for depredation claims that have gone uncompensated for a year. It incentivizes value-added agriculture, and it fully funds the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It provides, I mentioned this as being my highest priority, it provides a much-needed increase to the Board of Animal Health, about 5.5% over the two-year biennium, and funds AURI at the governor's recommended level. Those are my original thoughts, Madam Chair. We would like to have an overview now, if we could.
Chair and members, for the record, Ken Savory, House Fiscal Analysis. I'll be going through the spreadsheet that was in member packets and distributed earlier. The timestamp in the right-hand corner is 9:56 a.m. on 3/7/2025. And it says Ag Finance and Policy, the House File 1704 DE Amendment in the upper left-hand corner. There are various columns across the top of the spreadsheet. My presentation will be mostly from columns M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, and U. Those are the columns that represent changes from the base for House File 1704 DE3 amendment. The other columns, for example, columns D through I, are the forecasted amounts for 26 and 27 and for 28 and 29. And then columns J through L are the governor's recommended amounts per the governor's recommended budget release. My presentation will be focused mainly on what's changing in the bill from base. So with that, we'll start with the Department of Agriculture, beginning with the Protection Services Division, and we'll start on line number 30, which is the operating increase as proposed by the governor. The DE3 carries the operating increase of $1.343 million in FY26-27, and then $1,846,000 in biennium FY28-29. Line 31 is an appropriation for county ag inspectors. There is no base for this appropriation, so that's a $2 million new appropriation one time for county ag inspectors in 26 and 27. Line 32, there are several new changes. Firstly, in column M, you'll see an appropriation of $125,000 in FY25, then two appropriations of $175,000 each in each fiscal year thereafter for a total of $350,000 in FY26-27. The appropriation in FY25 is one time. Line 33 is the elk crop damage compensation. It's $125,000 in FY25. That's a one-time appropriation. And then there are base increases of $155,000 in FY26-27 and also in FY28 and 29. Line 34 is an appropriation for additional meat for the meat inspection program. It's $850,000 each fiscal year in 26 and 27, and then identical amounts in the tails. Line 35 is for the Biofertilizer Innovation and Efficiency Program. In 26 and 27, it's a $1,250,000 appropriation each fiscal year, and then that $2.5 million also occurs in the tails. And that wraps up the Protection Services Division. And we'll move down to on page number 2, line 84 and 85, which are change items for the Ag Marketing and Development. Promotion and marketing subsection. So line 84 is a $3 million reduction to the previous appropriation in chapter 20 or in laws 23 chapter 60 for the green fertilizer production facilities incentive. The appropriation was $7 million and this reduces it to $4 million. So you'll see on column M a negative $3 million for that particular item. Line 85 is a new appropriation for the farm safety, health, and wellness. This is similar to the base amount that was in the that was only in the 24-25 biennium in the previous 2023 legislation. It's $100,000 each fiscal year, and much like the previous appropriation, it is one time. Moving down to the section regarding agri on page number 3, line 123 is a increase to the biofuels infrastructure program for blender pumps. It is $1.5 million in each fiscal year, but it only occurs one time. So the carve out for infrastructure grants for biofuels on line 111 is $4,500,000 each fiscal year in 26 and 27, and then it reverts back to the $3 million base appropriation per year in the tails. Skipping down to line 124 is agri-livestock processing. It is a $1 million each fiscal year increase over the previous base, and the base reverts back in 28 and 29. So on line 112, you'll see that the FY26 and 27 appropriation is $1,250,000, and then the tails are $250,000 each fiscal year. And then, chair and members, you'll see on page 4, this is the Admin and Financial Assistance section. Line 185 starts the changes to that section. And I'll begin with the operating adjustment. That is $341,000 in FY26-27, and then $408,000 in the tails. This is identical to the governor's proposal. Line 186 is an appropriation for MAILSEA. This is an increase of $250,000 each fiscal year. And that occurs in the tails as well. Then the following items are pass-through grants to various agricultural organizations. I'll just go through these quickly. They all occur in the first year, and they all are one time. Line 187 is $2,000 for the Poultry Association of Minnesota. Line 188 is $36,000 for the Livestock Breeders Association of Minnesota. Line 189 is for the Northern Crop Institute. It's $120,000. Line 190 is the Minnesota Horticultural Society at $68,000. Line 191 is the Center for Rural Policy and Development. That is $50,000. And then flipping over to page number 5, you'll see line 192. That is $150,000 for the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. And then line 193 is for Green Seam. It's $400,000 one time. The next several items are reductions to already to base appropriations. So on line 195 is a $450,000 reduction each fiscal year for Second Harvest Heartland, and that reduction also occurs in the tails. Line 195 is the Emerging Farmer Office. It's a $250,000 reduction each fiscal year, and that also occurs in the tails. Line 196 is for the Climate Implementation Coordinator. The base for this appropriation is $150,000, so this reduction of $150,000 each year also eliminates the rider in the language. And then line 198 is an appropriation to First District Association for Dairy Processing Wastewater Assistance. It's $3.1 million, and it occurs one time. And then, Chair and members, that wraps up the Department of Agriculture. You'll see on line 223 appropriations, and in column Q, you'll see the difference from base, which is $16,470,000 in FY26-27, and then the difference from base in the tails is $5,914,000. The Board of Animal Health begins on line 225. There is one change item, and that is the operating adjustment. Line 234, it's $714,000 in FY26-27, and then the identical amount repeats in FY28-29. And then flipping over to AURI, which begins on page 6, they have one change item, which is line 255. It's the operating adjustment. This is identical to the governor's request. It's $136,000 in FY26-27, and then $182,000 in FY28-29. The last agency within the committee's purview is line 261, which is the Deed Office of Broadband Development. There are no changes made to the base, so the appropriation remains the same, which is line 269 just over $2 million in FY26-27, and then the identical amount in FY28-29. There are several transfers that occur within the bill that are not appropriated, but they're actually transfers between accounts, so from the general fund in this case to the ag fund or to the special revenue fund. One of them occurs in FY25. Which is on line 275. It's $1.5 million from the general fund to the ag emergency account. There are several base transfers, the pollinator research account, Minnesota Grown, those remain at base. The GREET appropriation, which is line 279, is an increase of $1 million over the base and $1 million over the base for the tails. Specifically, the designation within a GREET for Farm Business Management MALC FBM grants, or FBM, is $2,750,000 each fiscal year, so $5.5 million for the biennium. That's a $1 million increase over the base, and that occurs in the tails as well. And then, Chair and members, that wraps up the general fund changes. You'll see the changes for agree on line 29. And then another change item for the transfers is line 300, which is Ag Emergency Account. We covered those a little earlier. Line 304 is the summary of general fund impact. So you'll see the various total appropriations for the general fund for the various agencies within the committee's purview. I would draw everyone's attention to line 311, which is the general fund direct appropriation total. And this is the net calculation of the impact on the general fund. So that takes into account reductions and spending in FY25, as well as spending in FY26 and FY27. So if you look in column Q there on line 311, you'll see $17,070,000 is the committee's net general fund impact over base in FY26-27. And then the DE in column U is $7,810,000 in FY28-29. As a point of information, just on line 316 are the various all funds totals. This includes things like the Ag Fund, the Special Revenue Fund, Remediation Fund, Gift Fund, etc. Those are all at base amounts, so just as a point of information there. Lastly, I would direct members to the Agri summary, which is line 365. That's on page number 8. This just breaks down the various designated and undesignated amounts that are within Agri. You'll see on line 367 is the designated spending. That includes things like county fair distributions, bio-incentive grants, bio-incentive payments, biofuels infrastructure, which we talked about earlier, the livestock processing pieces. And then you'll see there'll be blanks here for the designated portions for urban youth agriculture, good food access program, and farm to school early care. And the reason for that is they are now, based on the language, direct members' attention to line 379, which is allowable spending. There are no longer appropriations, but up to designations within Agri that allow the department to spend up to a given amount per the DE. So, for example, on line 380, up to $2 million is allowable spending in Agri in FY 26 and 27, and per the tails. The same can be said, just flip the page over to line 381 and 382, for the Good Food Access Program, which is $1 million each fiscal year, and the Farm to School and Early Care designation, allowable amount, which is $1,294,000 each fiscal year. And then on line 384 is just the administrative allowance per Agri, which stays at the base amount of 6.5% each fiscal year. So, Madam Chair, that concludes the walk through the spreadsheet, and I would turn it over to Ms. Mullenbeck to cover the language.
Thank you, Ken Savory. Bagan Mullenbeck, go Bach, right? Mullenbeck.
Beck.
Beck, sorry. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Chair members, Megan Mullenbeck, House Research. I'll be walking through the DE3 amendment. This is similar to the 2023 finance bill, and for the most part, it's the same rider language. Section 1 is just the boilerplate appropriation format, and Section 2 is funding for the MDA. Subdivision 1 is the total appropriation. Subdivision 2 goes to MDA's pesticide and fertilizer management, lab services, plant protection, dairy and meat inspection, and food and feed safety divisions. And then there are specific riders for admin funding for the voluntary cleanup program, soil health financial assistance program. Clause C is wolf depredation payments from Representative Burkle's bill, House File 271, that we heard February 26th. And then Clause D are the elk depredation payments that were from House File from the same bill that we heard on February 26th. Clause E is to replace capital equipment in MDA's laboratory. Clause F is for meat processing, the liaison position. Clause G is the governor's request for an operating increase. Clause H is grants for counties to support county agriculture and agricultural inspectors, and the eligibility for this is laid out in Section 12 of this article. Clause I is for meat and poultry inspection services. Clause J is an appropriation for Chair Anderson's biofertilizer innovation and efficiency program that can be found in Section 11. Subdivision 3 appropriates money to MDA's Ag Marketing and Development Division. And Clause B is for the continuation of the dairy development and profitability enhancement programs. Clause C is for cost share payments for the cost of organic certification. Clause D is the mental health and farm safety bill we heard on March 5th, as amended by this committee. Clause E is the Agri appropriation, and that can be found on pages 6 through 10. And within this appropriation, there are specific carve-outs for incentive payments. There's also House File 43 for the biofuel infrastructure grants that we heard on March 3rd, as amended by this committee. The Farm to School program with the new language from 2024. And then Clause F sets the base for Agri. Subdivision 4 is for the agency admin and specified pass-through grants. Clause B is the mail seat appropriation, that bill that we heard February 17th. clauses C through I are the pass-through grants. Clause J is for grants to Second Harvest Heartland, and the purposes are laid out on pages 12 and 13, and it also requires reports from Second Harvest. Clause K is for grants for the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. Clause L is for the Emerging Farmers Office. Clause M is for Farm Advocate Services. Clause N is for a pass-through grant to Region 5 Development Commission. Clause O is for admin support for the Rural Finance Authority. Clause P is the governor's request for an operating increase. Clause Q is for down payment assistance grants with the updated 2024 rider language. Clause R is the grant to the First District Association for the wastewater pretreatment project that we heard about on February 10th. Section 3 is for the Board of Animal Health. Section 4 is for AURI, and both of these have the governor's request for an operating increase. Section 5 is for transfers to MDA accounts in the Ag Fund and the Special Revenue Fund, specifically for the Pollinator Research Account, Minnesota Grown Account. Then there's the AGREET transfer that was from House File 653 that we heard on February 17th. As well as the Ag and Environmental Revolving Loan Account for the Ag BMP loans. Section 6 cancels the $3 million from the 2024 appropriation for green fertilizer grants. Section 7 is Representative Burkle's bill, House File 601, that we heard on February 26th, that provides money for depredation payments in the current fiscal year 2025. And this section has an immediate effective date, along with fiscal year 2025 transfer to the Ag Emergency Account. Section 9 modifies the Farm Down Payment Assistance Grants Program to increase the award cap for farmers purchasing more than 80 acres to $30,000 for a loan. Section 10 provides a definition of commercial nitrogen fertilizer for Chair Anderson's Biofertilizer Innovation and Efficiency Program in Section 11. This program provides a per-acre payment to qualified farmers who reduce the use of commercial nitrogen fertilizers. A farmer is qualified to receive payments in this program if they are a Minnesota resident operating farmland located in Minnesota. They submit documentation, including a crop nutrient management plan, and enroll a minimum of 40 acres. The commissioner must review the minimum fertilizer reduction rate, as well as qualifying products that can be used by farmers in this program. And this also requires rulemaking. Section 12 establishes the eligibility for county ag inspector grants. This language is from House File 39. Article 2 is the broadband article. And Section 1 is the boilerplate appropriation format. Section 2 appropriates money to deed for Office of Broadband Development. And Section 3 is House File 47 that we heard on March 5th that modifies requirements for underground telecom installation. And this section also has an immediate effective date. And that concludes my walkthrough.
Thank you very much for that report. Are there any questions from members for nonpartisan staff? Seeing none. All right. Is Commissioner Peterson here? Would he like to weigh in on this bill? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I just want to be on record in first place saying I appreciate the work in putting a bill together always. This is kind of a unique situation. You know, when we look at it too, we taking in things that are big issues right now for the department, like our operating adjustment, the Wolf and Elk situation, where we are behind on the payments, meat inspection, and the ag emergency account. There definitely are things in here that need to be addressed. I'd say right now, though, the department and the administration's position is currently to support the governor's budget until we have like a global target situation that's agreed to. And so that's, you know, our position at the time. You know, a lot of the things too may kind of work themselves out in the next couple of weeks with our federal funding situations, but I can just tell you right now that there's a lot of uncertainty in different programs that we're having. It seems to change by the hour, actually the minute, the hour, and the days and the weeks ahead. So, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, we do look forward to working with you together to craft a bill that bipartisanly that hopefully we can pass and do well for agriculture. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Do members have any questions for Commissioner Peterson? Seeing none, all right, thank you. Members, we have testifiers to speak, present to speak on a couple of the provisions that we have not heard this year and have not been included in previous ag finance bills. The first one to come to the table is Cameron Henning, agronomist for Pivot Bio. Would you please come to the testifiers table, state your name, and provide your testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Cameron Henning. I'm a commercial agronomist for Pivot Bio, residing in and covering southwest Minnesota. I am here to speak to Section 11 of the House File 1704, which would create a new program that would incentivize farmers who grow nitrogen-dependent crops, such as corn, to reduce a portion of their synthetic commercial nitrogen and replace that with a biological source of nitrogen to receive a cash incentive after the growing season when the practice change can be verified. I'm here today to provide a brief overview of one type of product a farmer might use to qualify for this incentive program. Ours is not the only company, nor the only product that farmers can use to reduce their commercial synthetic nitrogen use and replace it with a more environmentally friendly source of nitrogen. Biological products seem to be one of the most rapidly growing areas of agriculture, with dozens of companies offering new products and solutions and more companies entering the space every day. An example of a biological source of nitrogen would be a naturally occurring microbes that take nitrogen from the air and deliver it to the plants, i.e. nitrogen-fixing bacteria. The product and microbes I work with go on the seed at planting and are gene-edited to fix nitrogen on the root system of the plant around the clock, providing a stable and consistent source of nitrogen. These gene edits do not add anything to the microbe and do not change the genetic makeup of the microbe. The edits simply unlock the microbe's genetic potential, allowing the microbes to fix nitrogen when there are other nitrogen sources available, and as well as fixing nitrogen throughout the growing cycle of the crop. The practice of using biological sources is important because there are a number of environmental benefits that come with making the switch. Even for just a portion of the nitrogen needs, maybe most timely to the state of Minnesota, is the potential water quality benefits. Biological sources of nitrogen do not leach and do not volatilize, and therefore do not contribute to high nitrate in the water or nitrous oxide in the air. Rather, these forms of nitrogen are spoon-fed to the plant and are spoon-feeding the plant a portion of their nitrogen needs throughout the growing season with virtually no impact. By taking even a small portion of synthetic nitrogen out of the growing cycle means that a potential source of nitrate leaching and contamination was never in the system. Just like farmers apply nitrogen annually, they can use biological sources of nitrogen, such as nitrogen-fixing microbes, annually to meet part of their nitrogen needs. Other examples of biological sources of nitrogen can be applied later in the season to plant leaves, or biological compounds and biostimulants can be applied to the soil to ramp up the natural productivity of native soil microbes. Again, I am here today to provide a brief overview of one type of product a farmer might be able to use to qualify for this incentive program. Biological products are growing rapidly throughout agriculture, with dozens of companies offering new products and solutions all the time. Thank you for your time, and the ability to provide some technical content to the proposed incentive program. I'm available to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Do members have any questions for Mr. Henning? Seeing none. All right. Thank you very much. Next up for testifying, I have Bob Dunning, Stearns County Agricultural Inspector. Please come to the testifiers table, state your name, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Chair Anderson, thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Bob Dunning, Stearns County Agricultural Inspector. I'd like to express gratitude from our association, the Ag Inspector Association of Minnesota, for including the Ag Inspector funding bill in your omnibus package. Ag inspectors enforce the Minnesota noxious weed law. They educate citizens on the harmful effects of noxious weeds. They recommend management options to those who need help. They also train city and township officials to be local weed inspectors and assist them with scouring their respective areas and looking for issues. Ag inspectors also manage biological control programs within their county. And in a nutshell, that's using insects to control harmful plants. They also preside over problematic cases, assist the Minnesota Department of Ag with a number of various programs they're running. And I've been an ag inspector for 12 years, and funding available to do this important work has been very limited and sporadic. These funds will be instrumental in strengthening terrestrial invasive species management across the entire state. Thank you all again, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do members have any questions for Mr. Dunning? Seeing none. All right. Thank you for coming
today.
Thank you. Members, we have a list of testifiers. For the sake of time, we will hear from all the testifiers and then take questions at the end. So the first person up on my list is Hunter Peterson, Minnesota Farm Bureau. Please come to the testifiers table, state your name, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Hunter Peterson, and I serve as the Public Policy Specialist at Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. On behalf of our 31,000 family farm and ranch members, I appreciate the opportunity to comment on the DE amendment to House File 1704. So I'd like to share our support for a number of the provisions included in the amendment. First, we certainly appreciate the operating adjustments for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the Board of Animal Health, and AURI. I'll briefly add that our members might wish to see a greater funding increase for the Board of Animal Health in the Ag Emergency Account, but nevertheless, very much appreciate what's been included. Thank you as well for the increased funding for Wolk and Elf depredation payments. Not only will this cover the shortfall in the current fiscal year, but ensure that claims are not turned away in the future due to a lack of funds. We also appreciate the additional funds to support the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, as well as the Farm Business Management Program. MALC, through its variety of programming and partnerships, helps drive our industry forward, and the Farm Business Management Program strengthens farmers' business skills, leads to more successful operations, and saves family farms. I'll also highlight briefly our support for the funding directed towards wastewater processing at the First District Association. And then within the Agri program, thankful for the investments in the Biofuels Infrastructure Grant Program, as well as the dollars for the livestock and meat processing, which will give our farmers and ranchers different marketing opportunities and greater access to local processing. I'll comment too on the funding for the proposed biofertilizer program. Certainly think it has a lot of merit. It's a good idea. But just given the state's fiscal situation, think it might be better to direct those funds towards an established program. I think this concept could fit somewhere within the soil health assistance grant program, which provides farmers a wide array of options for their soil health practices. And that's a program that has seen strong demand since its establishment, continues to be oversubscribed, And I think some of those funds, too, could be put towards the Board of Animal Health or the Ag Emergency Account, just to make even more certain that our state is prepared for present and future animal health challenges. So I'll just end by reinforcing that the state's tight financial situation will not be solved on the back of the agriculture budget. Agriculture is a tiny portion of our state budget, especially compared to its economic impact. So as Chair Anderson said, this relatively small pool of funds will do a lot of good. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to comment. And after the other testifiers, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next up is Stu Laurie, Minnesota Farmers Union. Please come to the table, state your name, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Harder and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie, Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And on behalf of our members, I'm glad to share some thoughts on the DE to 1704. I'll start by highlighting a couple pieces that we're glad to see in this proposal and certainly more to discuss. But I'll echo the support for operating increases for MDA, AURI, and Board of Animal Health, and just the fact that programs are largely held harmless at the agencies. A longtime priority for this committee and certainly Farmers Union, the increased funding for livestock processing, both for inspections and also the one-time increase for meat and poultry processing grants. Third and top of mind, particularly given the challenges in the farm economy right now, I wanted to highlight the investments in farm business management and farm safety, health, and wellness. I spoke with folks recently, and I think the commissioner referenced it in different remarks that were reported in the media, but farmer lender mediations are up 300% this year compared to last year. It reflects the challenges that folks are facing. Those two programs are going to help folks weather that. Next, a couple pieces that we have concerns about, and as this committee continues to work towards a final proposal for agriculture this year, we hope they'll earn your consideration. This proposal cuts green fertilizer grants by $3 million. This is a proposal that we worked hard on in the 2023 biennium, had strong support, and will help farmer cooperatives purchase equity in green fertilizer production and both lower the carbon intensity of cropping systems and also invest in that local generation of fertilizer. Second, the cuts to the Emerging Farmers Office. I think, when I go around the country and talk to other farmers union states, they're jealous of all the incredible programming that we have in Minnesota. That office helps folks access that programming and make sure that everyone can build a life in agriculture in Minnesota. And finally, I'll just highlight the change in appropriations language, in particular the farm to school program, saying that it's up to an amount and not designating an amount within Agri. I fully trust the Department of Agriculture supports farm to school, but they did just have a significant cut to federal funding for farm to school, and so you know, want to make sure to flag that as well. It's hugely popular with our members. I'll just end by sharing that from our view, a good agriculture budget complements, leverages opportunities, and in particular fills gaps that are created by the federal government, and in particular the Farm Bill. When I talk to members, they're not looking necessarily at St. Paul, honestly, right now. They're looking at D.C. And they're seeing frozen ag programs, layoffs at county offices. The House just passed, the House majority just passed a $230 billion cut to ag programs, or instructions for the committee to make that. And I think they're wondering about how that's going to land. So, I mentioned farmer lender mediation. That's something the committee hasn't had the opportunity to talk about now. I did learn that their funding is frozen right now while they're experiencing that extraordinary increase in demand. So flagging that, and I hope as this committee continues to have conversations about the agriculture budget, we can gain more certainty from our federal partners and then respond to that in kind. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next up is Laura Schreiber, Government Relations Director from the Land Steward Project. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Laura Schreiber. I am the Government Relations Director for Land Stewardship Project. LSP is a grassroots membership organization made up of farmers, rural residents, and supporters across Minnesota and the Midwest. And our mission is to promote sustainable agriculture and create a more just farm and food system. So I appreciate the opportunity to comment on House File 1704 today. There's not enough time to discuss everything in the bill, but wanted to keep my comments toward LSP's three main legislative priorities this year that we developed through our farmer steering committees. So first, creating greater market access opportunities for small and mid-sized farmers by supporting programs like the Farm to School and Early Care Grant Program, Livestock Processing Investment Grant as well. Second, to support funding and pathways for land access, especially for new and beginning farmers, as this is the number one barrier that we hear from farmers to succeed in their business and be able to make future planning decisions. Third priority, to scale the adoption of soil health practices across Minnesota to help create more resilience in the land, protect our water, and ensure farmers can adapt to our changing climate. Equipment is often quoted as a top barrier to adopting new practices, which is why LSP is excited to see investment in the Soil Health Financial Assistance Grant. I would love to see greater investment as that's been a very oversubscribed program. However, disappointed to see the proposed cut to the climate coordinator at MDA. They've just brought on a fantastic new staffer to help support farmers in Minnesota accessing resources that can allow Minnesota farmers to really be a leader in soil health. And I'll echo Stu's concerns around the funding for Farm to School. This program has been incredibly popular. Each year there is greater demand to be able to get fresh fruits, vegetables, protein into schools and pay our local farmers for that. And would like to see that base funding remain at $1.29 million. In fiscal year 2023, we had $5.6 million in requests for that program. So the demand really is clear that people want to take opportunities to utilize this. And just to give further context, this is especially important as we learned late last week that the cooperative agreement that MDA had USDA to bring $13 million into our state over the next 3 years is now canceled. So I think really important to prioritize funding for that program. Moving into, you know, supporting land access, the Emerging Farmers Office is incredible for the work that it does. And I know many farmers that go through LSP's Farm Beginnings course take well advantage of the offering and programming that the incredible staff do there. And knowing the average age of farmers is at an all-time high of 57, I think it's really important that we support the next generation of farmers and continue to fully fund the office. Lastly, just covering the land, farmland down payment assistance program. We appreciate the continuation of $1 million per year, though with land access being the number one barrier many new farmers are facing, would like to see greater investments in that program. And we recommend, appreciate the recommendation to change the funding amount, since a lot of people we talk to, $15,000 is helpful, but not necessarily as much when the average price of an acre of land is around $6,000 for Minnesota. So instead of for just applicants that are purchasing more than 80 acres of land, recommend that the grant award be made $30,000 for all applicants. And just lastly, I want to zoom out for a moment. I think it's important to take into account the context in which we are making this year's agriculture bill. There is an unprecedented amount of uncertainty with federal funding and what Minnesota and farmers can count on. And some farmers are already feeling the pains of federal funding cuts, as you know, we heard with also staffing and conservation programs and local food purchasing assistance funding. So really want to utilize this time during session to remain nimble and responsive to what's happening in Washington and not rush putting together an agriculture bill. So thank you for the opportunity to apply and or to testify, and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Next up is Melissa Wolf, Minnesota Cable Communications Association. Please come to the testifiers table, state your name for the record, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Melissa Wolf, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association, or Minnesota Cable. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the DE for House File 1704, and specifically the provisions in Section 3 addressing the telecommunications installer law that passed last year. Last year, the legislature passed a law that will stall broadband expansion across Minnesota. It forces well-trained, experienced broadband workers to stop working unless they take an additional 40 hours of training and pass a new state-mandated test, training that no other state requires, and it will take thousands of experienced broadband workers off the job of deploying broadband in greater Minnesota to take the 40 hours of training and pass a test. As mentioned in testimony last week, if this law is not modified to provide flexibility and clarity this legislative session, by July 1st of this year, this law will disqualify thousands of experienced broadband installers working anywhere in the seven-county metro area from working on broadband projects. To be clear, the provisions included in the DE for House Bill 1704 do not repeal last year's law, nor do they take away any of the safety standards that were established and will be required. However, the legislation hastily enacted last year gave broadband companies and installers the massive task of creating a new training program from scratch, getting the curriculum approved by DLI, recruiting and training trainers for the new program, training thousands of workers, scheduling the required hands-on training during months when the ground isn't frozen, scheduling thousands of workers for the first certification exam, all by July 1st of 2025, an impossible deadline to meet. The state must not disqualify thousands of experienced broadband installers from doing the work of connecting homes with broadband. Section 3 of the DE amendment provides additional time, flexibility, and clarity to get the new safety program up and running so the new certification program is done right, broadband work is not interrupted, and we meet the federal mandate to invest $652 million into Minnesota broadband in the next 4 years. With so much work to do and so little time to do it, Minnesota can't afford to sideline its broadband workers. We must fix the flaws in this law and keep Minnesota's broadband workforce in the field doing the work of connecting Minnesotans to broadband. Thank you to Chair Anderson for including this important and crucial bill and to the committee for your consideration and support, and I'm happy to answer any questions later.
Thank you for that. Next up is Tom Hansen, representing Minnesota Telecom Alliance. Please come to the testifiers table, state your name, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tom Hansen, and I am here speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, or MTA. I'm here today to support the broadband labor language in House File 1704. As you heard in testimony last week, this language is an important start to ensuring all Minnesotans get access to border-to-border broadband. While the MTA believes that the tools are already in place to ensure the safe installation of broadband through the Office of Pipeline Safety and local permitting authorities, we are committed to working with all of the stakeholders to find compromise where we can with the law that was passed last year. The language in this bill is a step in the right direction. Our goal as an organization for the last 10 years has been to work with the state to provide true border-to-border broadband. This issue doesn't just affect Minnesotans in Carlstead or Byron or Pipestone, but also Minnesotans in Minneapolis, Mankato, and St. Paul. MTA also understands that more work is needed to find peace in the valley, something we all want, and we are committed to that process. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I'll be available for questions.
Thank you for that. Next is Kevin Pranis, Marketing Manager from Luyuna, Minnesota and North Dakota. Please come to the testifiers table, state your name, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Kevin Pranis on behalf of Luyuna, Minnesota, North Dakota. I'll try not to repeat any of my testimony from last week. I would just say, in general, we thought there was a respectful conversation. We don't understand at this point why, though a controversial and poorly vetted changes to labor statutes that disproportionately impact the Twin Cities metro area are part of the House Agriculture Committee's omnibus bill, especially when the changes have been opposed by cities, gas utilities, and organized labor as unwise and unsafe. When Minnesota passed the broadband safety bill, we flashed a red light to fly-by-night and often out-of-state contractors that have been tearing up rights-of-way and endangering communities like Austin and Bloomington. One of the largest telecom contractors testified in House Workforce Committee that the market is already getting better as a result. Section 3 would reverse that progress and send a green light to the same kind of contractors that thought it was appropriate to patch a gas pipeline leak with duct tape. None of the proponents, it's unclear what the intention of the bill is with regard to training hours, but I would say that if the intention is to reduce from 40 to 10, none of the proponents of the legislation have attempted to explain how they intend to cut training time by 3/4 while adequately covering required content. Mr. Hansen from ABC dodged that question here. Last week, Mr. Christensen said, how much in a workforce, how much training does it take to dig a hole, which doesn't answer the question. And the answer is you can't. As any construction laborer could tell you, what happens when you try to put 40 gallons of anything into a 10-gallon bucket, you end up with a mess all over you. So I'd last say that what Minnesota really can't afford is more contractors that think duct tape is a good material for patching pipeline, and we urge the House Agriculture Committee not to race in that direction, but instead refer this matter to the Labor Committee, since this refers to labor statutes. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up is Jamie Fitzke, Director of Government Affairs, CenterPoint Energy. Please come to the testifier's table, state your name, and begin your testimony.
Chair and representatives, my name is Jamie Fitzke, CenterPoint Energy's Director of Government Affairs. I'm here to speak on Article 2, Section 3, the broadband provision. First, I'd like to note and thank Chair Anderson and Representative Schultz, as the language included in the omnibus mainly reflects a 6-month delay in training and has removed a vast majority of our concerns on the exemptions and reductions in safety training. Additionally, I would like to thank stakeholders and committee members here. The questions asked in committee and conversations with each other have been valuable in understanding each other's perspectives and concerns. Due to testimony last week, I feel compelled to provide some additional information for the record. My colleague, Crystal Gores, was present here on Wednesday. In her testimony, she stated that the magnitude of fiber being installed is causing a dramatic increase in damages to our facilities. This is true. She noted that over the last 2 years, so 2023 and 2024, telecom damages have increased by 60%. What wasn't provided to the committee is over both of those years that broadband excavators have been found at fault 75% of those damages. 25% of the time has been locators or operators who've been found at fault. Safety is CenterPoint Energy's number one priority. Even one strike is one too many. We believe that working together will help in reducing damages. We would hope that safety certification training would include education on best practices and the dig law. And in turn, together, we can reduce damages across the system. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify on H1704DE3 amendment? All right. Are there any questions from, please come to the testifier's table and then state your name and begin your testimony.
Greetings, Chair and representatives. My name is PJ Connolly, and I'm the Director of Commercialization at Savannah Institute, which is a leader in advancing agroforestry, profitable agroforestry systems for growers and rural communities. We are enthusiastic participants in the movement to develop perennial diverse continuous living cover, or CLC, agriculture in the upper Midwest. Just want to say, please forgive my unique look today. I coach hockey, and the boys made it to state, so they wanted the coach to participate as well. For the last two legislative cycles, the state legislature approved and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture implemented the Innovative Developing Markets for CLC Crops program. This program has invested $1 million to date in value chain and market development for continuous living cover crops. The community of continuous living cover growers and entrepreneurs and their stakeholders are extremely grateful for this support. Funding for the Developing Markets for CLC Crops program is unfortunately not included in the recently released House Ag budget. I'd like to provide an example of the impactful projects that this program supports. One of our close partners and a recipient of this grant program who could not be here today is the Midwest Elderberry Cooperative. This grant has enabled them to make progress on their plan to more than double their acreage of production, quadruple their production volume, and progress towards building a custom processing facility in Montrose, Minnesota. The program has also funded acquisition of agroforestry harvesting and processing equipment, brought a perennial grain manufacturing facility online, post-harvest cleaning of camelina, and more. The program has made Minnesota a regional leader in advancing innovative, profitable solutions that protect water quality, improve soil health, and support wildlife. Yet demand for this program still far outruns available funding. On behalf of the agroforestry and continuous living cover community, I ask you to consider continuing support for the Developing Markets for CLC Crops program that will help spur new value chains, markets, and ultimately sustainable and profitable opportunities for Minnesota growers. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Are there any other people in the audience who would wish to testify on this amendment? I'm not seeing any. All right. Are there any questions from members for the testifiers? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And not for the testifiers, but just, you know, Representative Anderson, this is not normal. It's not normal. You know, and I've heard you state many times, you know, that ag should be nonpartisan. Well, congratulations. You've made it partisan by trying to ram this through while you have a one-vote majority. Extremely disappointing. You know, there's going to be a special election tomorrow. I think the makeup of the legislature will change, but apparently the dinner bell was rang. I mean, another thing that wasn't normal is having two provisions that hadn't even have hearings just show up today and say, hey, we want some money. Give us some money. We haven't even heard them before. Give us some money. We did have testimony today of the path of destruction that the Trump administration is leaving not only in agriculture, but in our country. So it's not normal to try to ram this bill through with a one-vote majority that's not a majority. It's not normal to try to move this ahead when we don't know all the things that are happening. There are basic infrastructure supports that the federal government provides for agriculture and subsequently our state. They're being kicked out by a federal government that just doesn't care, that is smashing things to smash them. And we're gonna have to pick up the slack. And we don't know how much slack that is, but supporting those better things. So we're sitting in here today, all the same folks acting as if it's normal. We'll just have a normal bill. We'll just pass it through because ag is special. Ag is especially going to be impacted by the federal government, and we do not know those impacts yet. So it'd be unwise, frankly reckless, to pass this at this time. It's not normal. One final thing, you know, there's a poison pill in here, the broadband stuff, clearly controversial, stuck in the middle of the ag bill. No matter how, you know, what condiments we put on the sandwich, it's still not going to go down, not going to taste good. It's not normal. So, you know, we're not having a lot of questions today. Our questions are why try to push it through on Wednesday? We could wait and work genuinely together in a compromise fashion to pass something, but we still don't know the groundwork. Yes, we've got the forecast, but as Commissioner Peterson said, every day, every hour, every minute, there's a new wreckage, new destruction. And we're going to need to know how to support agriculture in Minnesota together on that. So you guys can go through and pass stuff on Wednesday when you still have one vote, even though the election's tomorrow. But I don't think you have 68 votes. You can try to push this through. but we're going to have to do a do-over sometime. And we are willing to work at that point in the future to put together a bill that we all could vote for. But this is not that bill.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Chair Anderson, do you wish to address the concerns?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hansen, I hear you. But I would pose a question about what has been normal during this session so far. We sat here for nearly 4 weeks and patiently waiting for you all to come back, and thankfully we did, all got together. That pushed us back 4 weeks on this job. And one of my main reasons for wanting to do this, we were around in 2011 when there was a state shutdown, and luckily the ag bill got done before the session ended. It was the only bill that got done. And especially with the uncertainties potentially facing us from Washington, I think getting an ag bill done before it could get caught up in the things that may happen here at the end of session with things that go on, I think it would behoove us to get an ag bill done sooner rather than later. And I think back to the last night of session back in 2024, when a very large bill was covering numerous subjects was passed in the last, half hour of session with no input from our side either. We put together a good bill. It has a increase in the base, and I don't think we're going to see that again as we go down the road. We were given a good target, and we'll have to see what happens. But I was happy to have the target as big as it was, and we did what we thought were good things with that money. Sure, there's things that weren't in there, and I would just explain the incentive program for the biologics. You and I were in Iowa for that conference this January, and I met a senator from Nebraska, and they've developed a program similar to this, and this is where we took most of that language from that bill. And I had the bill jacketed, but there was a couple of changes that had to be made to it, so we had to have it rejacketed. And I think it's been a month since, I think they've slowed down in the revisor's office. I got the jackets this morning for the bill, and we had to include it to have it be part of this meeting. So for that, that's the explanation for not hearing that. But we've heard the bill about the ag inspectors before. I've carried that bill for a number of years. And I would just say one more thing. You know, last year's ag bill, I don't think had any provisions from the Republican side of the aisle. We maybe had some bills heard, and I'm not quite sure if anything that we had was included in the bill from last year. I may be wrong on that, but that's my recollection, Madam Chair.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Carter and Chair Anderson. You're correct. And to talk about what's normal, we've been sitting on this side of the aisle for 2 years. And to speak to those very legitimate times that we tried to really bring quality amendments for 2 years straight, and last year, through the entire year, Democrats accepted one amendment, one word, one change. To just have that complete disregard for that long, we've sat here for years taking our medicine, doing the job as diligently as we could. I thank Chair Anderson for bringing this forward. This is the right time, and I understand your frustration, but please understand the frustrations that we've gone through for 2 years. So, more of a comment than a question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative
Jacob. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Anderson, I have a question. In the power sharing agreement, line 5.6, it says the intent of this agreement is that all powers and duties of a committee chair will be exercised by joint agreement of the co-chairs. Do you believe that the bill before us right now is in the spirit of this power sharing agreement?
Representative Anson.
From my understanding, the power sharing agreement changed a few times. And this bill was put forward by Republicans. And that would be my response to you, that I did call Chair Hansen on Saturday, but he didn't have input into the bill. It was a Republican bill, yes.
Representative Frederick. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. I'm glad that you pointed out that in January you and I were working together, although it was in Iowa, but we were working together. My mother had a statement when I was in high school, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Just because you can bring this bill doesn't mean you should. Just because you can pass it. And I would note, whatever happened last year, I would note that Representative Nelson in the environment bill had a bill that was heard and included, along with about four or five other Republican bills that were included in the omnibus bill that I put together and became law. So this isn't normal, but I think you can look at my record of working with people to get stuff passed. And we have a whole bunch of jackets that haven't come. All of our members, I believe, have put together proposals, are in the process, that are up in the revisor's office too, that haven't gotten heard, just like the one we heard today. And so that's, just because you can bring this bill doesn't mean you should. We can't even bring the bills because we haven't got them yet. And so you will do what you can do with the majority because you can. That doesn't mean you should. And we still stand ready to work with you because we are going to be very likely at 67-67, not a 68. It's going to take both sides to pass a bill. And we'll have to do that looking at the destruction that's coming from the federal government side on very basic things for agriculture, very basic things that are being kicked out, that we're going to have to deal with, and the people haven't started coming yet. Frankly, I think a number are in shock, but it's going to happen, and we're going to be asked for more help. And that's when we have to be ready to work together. Minnesotans gave us 67-67. They want us to work together. So we need to.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. As far as I know, there have been around 10 or fewer than 10 bills introduced by your side and referred to the committee. I don't know if anybody had requested a hearing. And again, if your jackets aren't done, yeah, I understand the situation because we had some of the same things too. Again, I have to maybe hearken back and just mention again that we didn't get going for 4 weeks, which maybe put the squeeze on all of us in the revisor's office as well to get these things done in a timely fashion. And I just think this bill is a good bill for agriculture, and I would support it, ask for its support.
Thank you. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to respond to Representative Jacob's comments earlier about how he has spent the last couple years just very upset about the process of us being the majority. And I would say of all years, this is the year that we have a golden opportunity to be bipartisan.
In November, the state elected us in a tied equal 67-67 membership. In a matter of days, I expect that we will, the Democrats will get our 67th member. And this is really a rare opportunity for us to truly work in a bipartisan fashion. And so I am quite disappointed that this is how we are operating. This is not how Minnesota, I don't believe this is how Minnesotans will like to see us working in this way, especially when voters have said that we are a 67-67 chamber in November. And of course, I know you guys now have a one vote majority, but Representative Anderson, Chair Anderson, should, if and when we do, Democrats do get our 67th member, will this bill still be relevant?
Chair Anderson.
Representative Vang, I think that depends on your side. If you refuse to work with this bill, then I get, I've been told that. So at that point, it probably wouldn't be. But again, I would just say that this is a good bill for ag. It increases base funding by $17 million. And I would encourage us to work together on this bill. There could be some changes, some additions or corrections, whatever. But it would be relevant to our side. So I think it's up to your side to decide if you want to put this in the circular file or work with it. And I would just add one other thing, Madam Chair. I want to be bipartisan also. I think that's the way we should govern here in this state. But, and not going back to rehash the last 2 years or whatever, but all I would say was you had the trifecta, you had the votes to pass anything you wanted to, and you, in some ways, passed a lot of things that we didn't support. So to hear now the talk now of let's be bipartisan, I agree we should, but I didn't hear a lot of that the last couple of years from your side, because you didn't need our votes and pass the things that you wanted to have passed. So that would be my response.
Representative Bang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Anderson. I'll just say that how we're hearing this DE right now, it is premature considering how there is a special election coming up. The budget targets have not been announced. We don't know what the budget targets are. So when you say there are budget targets, well, half of us don't know what they are. This is the first time we've seen a budget bill like this in committee. I would just say it's premature for us to have this discussion right now when there's still a lot of uncertainty going on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Again, I would just say that we were given this target, and it's a good target, and I'm not so sure when these uncertainties keep coming that are being mentioned. And I really, you know, I'm a farmer, and I understand the work that USDA does with farmers, with meat processing, whatever. And I think nobody can expect the state to entirely backfill any shortfalls coming out of Washington. We did backfill in this bill over $1 million with meat processing at USDA way back last year before the election took place, that they announced to the department here that they were going to be cutting back on the federal share of inspecting meat here in Minnesota. So some of these things have not been caused by the election of President Trump. Some of these were happening before. We saw some information from way back last November, December, that some departments were going to be running short of money to pay. They're going to be in a deficit because of a lot of overtime being worked and some raises being given after the session of 23, after we had gone home after setting the budget, that some increases were given and budgets became short. So there's a lot of talk here about all of our problems are being caused by Washington. And I'm here to say that we are in uncertain times. I grant you that. But they're not all caused by Washington. And it's my my hope and prayer that these things get settled and decided soon out there, but we have to do what we have to do here in Minnesota. And I think, again, this bill is a solid bill for Minnesota agriculture, and I would urge its support.
Representative Vang? Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Henderson, for bringing this forward. I think this is the right time to pass a bill that makes ag in Minnesota and our food industry more competitive, more productive. I don't know. In my mind, this is a bill that does what Democrats have traditionally always approved and funded. Urban ag, good food access, Forever Green, Emerging Farmers Office. Those things are in there. Might not agree on the numbers, but I guess if my colleagues on the other side want to make the bill better, that's your job on Wednesday. So bring the amendments, and we can talk about them. But I think, just given what I have going on in my district with the wolf and elk depredation numbers we're seeing, the fact that the Department of Ag is short of money now, and my folks are sitting there waiting for those dollars. As Chair Anderson alluded to earlier, back in the, was it 2011's budget, the only budget that got done prior to the shutdown was the ag budget. So the $17 million extra in the base, I mean, we can talk about what that looks like on Wednesday, but I think this is a good bill, and I think moving forward, making ag more productive in Minnesota is what we're all about. It's what we should be doing, and I want to thank, again, the chair for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Representative Burko. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, one more note. I, and I'm sure others on the committee, I get emails from Republican constituents, and usually they say stop spending, usually with capital letters and a bunch of exclamation points. So, I'm going to share the budget here, $17 million increase, and say here's the Republican majority wanting to spend more. We are probably going to have a situation, I'll go back to the federal administration, where nursing homes will close, our human services budget, our education budgets, our higher education budgets are all going to get affected. And so I agree with you. We are going to have to be strategic, and that's going to take time to see on prioritization. And by passing this now, it's locking in the status quo with more money, with more GOP spending. I think we can do better. This isn't normal. And I look forward to working with you next week when we get back to the tie.
Chair Anderson?
No, I think I've said about what I need to say. Just one other small thing. The Office of Emerging Farmers talked about being cut. Under this bill, they would have the same funding they had in the current biennium, 24-25. They would not have an increase. And, only in government speak, I guess, when you call a reduction of an increase a cut. There are things like that in this bill. And we've done the best we could with our priorities and tried to help as many people as we could. And I would just ask for support.
Any other members have wish to speak on the bill? Seeing none. And I just want to ask, because we went from the testifiers to talking about the bill, does anybody here, any member, have any questions for our testifiers? I'm not seeing any. All right, Chair Anderson, do you have any concluding comments on the DE3 amendment before we lay it over?
No, I do not, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. The H1704 DE3 amendment is laid over. Members, our next meeting is Wednesday, March 12th, 2025. Oh, have I forgotten something? Oh, I apologize. Let me back up. House File 1704 is laid over. I apologize for that. Members, our next meeting is Wednesday, March 12th, 2025 at 1 p.m. This meeting is adjourned.